Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh!
Let him play!
He wins. Great steak. Smells like poop.
Honestly, like, if Urban Meyer wants to come to Connecticut, bring him on. I mean, come on. I'll take him, too.
Nia Jackson, I think, weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Can we, isolate that clip? Nia Jackson weighs 280 pounds. Oh!
Let her play.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and welcome to 2020 here on, from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. It's an exciting time to be an NBA fan here, and we're excited to bring you the new season of DidCal, and we hope you enjoyed the entirety of the DidCal retrospectives and are commemorating the 10 years we've been on the air up to that point. And now we start our next 10 years, so it's, well, we hope so. I mean, that just, there's no telling what can happen from this point until 2030. That's scary. I don't even know where the world will be in 2030, but 2020, we're doing all right, and we're excited to bring to you another round of shows. We'll start this season here on the 14th, a little later than normal, but we're excited to bring you our first NBA report of the year. And then tomorrow, we have our football show where we will talk about the bowl season that was, including the national championship game in which LSU dominated the second half and pulled away from Clemson in a very big, resounding victory. It really was their year. And we'll pay tribute to them in tomorrow's show, plus recap the bowl season and all the good games that went with it and all the bad games that went with it, too. So the football crew will be with us for that, Andy, John, Ron, and myself. And that's going to be a fun show. And then after that, late Thursday night, we are excited to have our friend Kevin on the Cape, expected to join us once again for Random Questions, the first Random Question show in quite some time. We'll give you some updates on how he's doing health-wise and how things are with the family. And your questions, to send it to us now at DidCal, and we will get them read on that program. So we got a couple of days, so go to DidCal. If you want to, you can write question followed by the question itself, but really just write the question. It's good enough. And we'll get ready to go. So now on to NBA talk. And once again, Chris and Georgia will join us for the anchor leg of the 2020 NBA season. Much to discuss, and certainly some unfortunate news to pass along as we begin the calendar year. Let's jump it. The NBA report for January 14th. It was in mid-December that former NBA Commissioner David Stern suffered a brain hemorrage, and in the weeks afterward, he was surrounded by friends and family, and things looked pretty grim, and on New Year's Day this year, he died at the age of 77. He was surrounded by his wife Diane and their family in the final moments. Clearly a lot of devastation throughout the league, and many people have come up to support David Stern's life and celebrate the life that it was. It certainly has been an impactful death for many of us in sports. One of the great commissioners that you've ever seen in the history of modern sports, and he is the guy that saved the league, in my view. I mean, he took this league and grew the sport, championed the small market, and elevated the prominence of the NBA from being just a sideshow and a train wreck, really. There were a lot of issues with drugs. They couldn't get games on TV at a regular hour. Their games were being tape delayed in the finals. And he took revenue, which at the time that he started his commissionership, was $10 million per year, and grew it to, in the modern days, $900 million per year. I mean, that is just the tip of the iceberg of all the great things he's done to grow the game and make it what it is. And he's inspired many, and his love for the game of basketball was certainly at the core of his greatness as a commissioner. And certainly every commissioner has ups and downs, and certainly there's downsides too. There were two player lockouts during his watch, But all in all, he saved the league, in my opinion, and I think he's made it much bigger than it had ever been before. Just comparing where the NBA was 35 years ago to the NBA today, it's amazing. And, yeah, I mean, 36 years ago he took over. Before that, he was legal counsel for the NBA. And before that, he was part of a law firm that had collaborated with the NBA for, to negotiate certain scenarios. I will say that even before he was commissioner, he was a big part of the driving force that negotiated the CBS television contract that they had with the NBA in the 80s, which really put that, for the casual person, put that league on the map. I mean, it was really interesting. They were on CBS before too, but this package that they negotiated really had them in the spotlight. And then during that same time, you had Magic and Bird starting up their own dynasties in L.A. and Boston, respectively. And then in the middle of that, you started the career of Michael Jordan started, and then that carried the NBA into the 90s. And then it just took on unprecedented popularity. And as that was going on, they had instituted the Dream Team, a collection of NBA All-Stars who were commissioned to represent Team USA in the 1992 Olympics in Barcelona, where they just dominated everybody. Overkill, perhaps, but at the same time, it increased the brand of the NBA and made it a global sensation. And that's what the NBA is today. It truly is global. I think of all the four sports, I don't think any sport is more ubiquitous of our four professional sports here in America than basketball. Every country in the entire planet is big on basketball, and I think David Stern is a big part of that. And so it hurt when I found out he had suffered the hemorrhage, and it is it's a real bummer that he's no longer with us. So with that, I bring on our co-host Chris in Georgia, and I know that Chris, you were certainly you were growing up just like me during the 80s when all this was going down, and you know, the growth of this league and the excitement that it brought to all of us was great. And I know that Stern was at the forefront. So I think I'll start. First of all, hello, good evening, and Happy New Year. How's it going tonight?
Doing well. Hope you're doing well.
I am, yep.
Yeah, I don't know what else to add to what you just said. I mean, you kind of covered a lot of the main points. I mean, he was commissioner for the NBA for almost the entire time I've been a fan, if you think about it, because I was, you know, I was born in the 70s, but really became a fan in the early 80s, with the ascension of Magic and Bird. Of course, as you mentioned, he took over in 84, and, you know, I think back to that time, you know, that was like the Olympics, and that was Michael Jordan and Ewing and that fantastic team that was coached by Bobby Knight. But you covered a lot of the things. I don't think any commissioner in our lifetime in any sport has had as big an impact on the game. And it was just kind of, he had this singular vision, it seemed, about what he thought the league could be, which was really the fact that he had that vision and the fact that he was able to execute it to such a degree, because as you mentioned, when he took over, the league was in really bad shape, and there were teams that were in danger of folding, and like you said, the TV contracts were a mess, and you couldn't watch these games finals as they were happening, which is bananas. And teams were in trouble, there was a whole drug problem, and you pointed out, rightly so, that it is the most international sport by far. I mean, I guess I'd say hockey's second, just because you have so many Europeans and Canadians and Russians and so forth in the NHL. But I wouldn't put it anywhere near just the global reach that the NBA has, which is remarkable when you think about it, just considering where they were as a league and how kind of frail they were when Stern took over. So yeah, it's very sad. And it kind of forced me to go down this rabbit hole of reading articles about Stern, just all the people he touched and all the lives he impacted. And, you know, he could be, I wouldn't say he could be, he was a very abrasive personality. He didn't suffer fools lightly, as the saying goes. And, but at the same time, I think he really deeply cared, and he worked hard to achieve his goals. And it was like some of the most interesting stories were just how he really tried to shape the league. And like, I remember not even that long ago, the Sacramento Kings, after Seattle Supersonics had moved to Oklahoma City, the Kings were, the ownership of the Kings was the Maloof brothers were in financial trouble, and they were trying to find a buyer in Seattle, if I remember correctly, as the story goes. And of course, you know, Sacramento's one of the, you know, I know it's the capital of California, but it is, you know, one of the smaller markets. And Stern fought that, and he wanted to keep them there, and he found a capable owner. And kept the Kings in Sacramento, and the Kings fans are grateful. I mean, they still. I did not know this is Sacramento Seattle rivalry now. Like anytime Seattle is mentioned in Sacramento, they people get very upset. I believe it was Spencer Hawes was on the Kings at that time, and he was lobbying for a move to Seattle because I believe he played at Washington State. And as a result, they stayed in Sacramento. And I think the street, I've never been to that arena, but the street outside is named like David Stern Way or something like that. And it was just, it's a small story, but it just kind of shows the impact and just how much control he had over this over this league, and how much he loved it, and how much he, how much he wanted to be involved. And we talk about Bill Simmons a lot, and I was kind of thinking about a story he told where he was kind of just starting out, and he put in a call to Stern. I can't remember what it was about. I think it had to do with like some facet of the labor agreement, and just he wanted to kind of like get the facts correct on, something to do with contractual side of things. And, you know, he put in a call, and an hour later, David Stern called him back and just talked to him, and just off the top of his head was giving him facts about, very sort of dry stuff, Dave, but it just showed you how earnest the man was, and how much he loved his job, and how much he loved the sport itself. And like you said, there's not been anyone like him. I mean, people bring up Pete Rozelle, and what Rozelle did for the NFL was remarkable too, because he was able to bring all the owners together and get them to do, you know, to kind of forge ahead with a contract for television that would, one, make the NFL the most popular sport, and two, allow for real revenue sharing. But Stern kind of did the same thing, and he made it an international sport. And as global as the NBA is, the NFL is probably the least global of the four major sports. Mm-hmm. Yep. And and I'm not, I'm not here to throw dirt on the NFL because they're doing fine, but outside of soccer, basketball's the most popular sport worldwide. And, you know, all the discussions we had about China, in the fall with the Rockets, GM Daryl Morey getting in hot water for criticizing their political stance in Hong Kong. It was you know, none of that would have been happened if it weren't for David Stern. So it's quite a legacy. It is deeply sad time. It's a time to reflect and just think about what a great job this man did and how he really did shape the league that we love today.
That's so well said. It really is. And I want to thank you for your thoughts on the legacy of Commissioner Stern. It's really been quite a journey, I think. And the amount of respect that just continues to be pouring out from everybody who's covered the NBA, it's like you said, vision. There's some incredible vision that Stern had, and I envy that vision to an extent. I wish I had vision like that, you know? Like, I want that kind of vision for something, and it really is a tribute to what an incredibly brilliant guy he was. So all the props, and may he rest in peace. So for this league that he has grown and for which it is today, we have a lot going on, and we can talk about some of the great stories in the NBA right now. A couple of them are a few of them are the rookies, and we'll get into that later in the show. Zion Williamson will start on Thursday, making his NBA debut. And let me take a wild guess. Is that game on TNT? Because the Pelicans are on like every day. So are they on TNT?
I don't know. I don't know if that's not that. I actually have to check the schedule.
I bet you they're on TNT. I mean, they've been every other game been on TNT. So that why wouldn't this one be on TNT too?
Let me check that one, Dave. I'll get back to you.
Well, while we do that, we'll talk about we can now segue into some of the big stories. You know what one of them is? Do we start on the negative with the Sixers? Because that team seemed to be at odds with one another. And just when you thought that they may have had a little momentum after a win against the Celtics, they lose two more games. And so they're having a rough season. And it's funny because if you look at the splits, they're actually doing pretty well at home. But anytime they get on the road, they can't win. They're 7-14 on the road, 18-2 at home. They've lost six out of their last 10 games, and they're on a two-game losing streak as we speak. So it's – and Embiid, to be fair, dislocated his finger about a week ago, and he's going to be out a long time. We're talking maybe months. So that's a setback for sure. But even when he was in there, it just didn't seem like things were really clicking with that team. And it didn't seem like that would make sense because they've got great players on that team. You got Horford. You have Simmons. We mentioned Embiid. And who else was I missing? Let's see. I mean, that's pretty good. But, I mean, yes, they lost a couple of key guys from last year. They lost Jimmy Butler, for instance. But you still got other guys like Josh Richardson, for example.
Josh Richardson is a good player.
Yeah.
I was going to say he's probably one of the more underrated players in the game right now because he's a good two-way guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you brought up the key guys. I mean, Tobias Harris is on that next tier. But yeah, you kind of covered it there. Yeah, it is interesting. Dave, we both picked them to be our finals representative.
Yep. Yep.
And as you pointed out, Embiid did have that really nasty finger injury, which I didn't want to see. And his finger almost looked like a cartoon drawing the way it was dislocated because it did not. I've never seen anything like that. Just looked awful. And yet they still managed to just beat the Celtics in Boston. I think it was in Boston. No, maybe that was in Philly. That was in Philly. No, it was in Boston. It was in Boston. Opening game of the season was in Philly. So this was in Boston. I think it was only, you know, their fifth or sixth loss in the Garden up there. So, the Sixers are sort of Celtics kryptonite this year. And they seem to relish playing Boston for some reason. It is weird. You hear the grumbling with Horford, you know, unhappy about his playing time. It's kind of a weird mix in the sense that, you know, they're very big. I mean, they guard, they play great defense, and yet they just seem to have a lot of problems. They're not they're not an elite shooting team, and there's a weird dynamic at play just because Simmons is your point guard and he's about 6'10" and yet not a shooter and doesn't really want to shoot. When your two best guys are Embiid and Simmons, and they both score a lot in the paint, it messes up your offensive dynamics and I don't know what the solution is really. I mean, I feel like maybe a trade is imminent. Maybe they're looking maybe Simmons is on the block. I don't know. But they certainly committed a lot of money to both these guys. So we'll see. But it's a weird scenario. And yet at the same time, Dave, I feel like, they're currently in sixth place. I mean, it's not, they're 25-16. They're playing 600 balls. So it's not like the sky is falling. I mean, they've hit a rough patch of four wins in the last 10 games. At the same time, like I said, I could see them, we're at the 50% mark right now. We're about 40 games in. So a lot of basketball we played. And, I've seen this play before, and I've seen teams that are very talented, like Philly, get into the playoffs and just kind of, turn it up a notch. And I could see them doing that a year. I really could. And I feel like, they don't have to panic because they have the players and, like teams like Boston that are really hot don't play them very well. So I could see the Sixers really going on a run. And then when you think about it last year, they had Butler, but it's a pretty similar team, with Tobias Harris and the two big guys that we talked about already. Then they added Horford, they lost Butler. But they came an eyelash from beating the Raptors in one of the more dramatic series I can remember. And who knows what would happen. Maybe they would, had they beaten the Raptors and they'd gone to the finals, maybe they win the title. And they're, the Phillies, the Sixers have ended their long, championship drought in hoops. So, I can't really throw dirt on them just because I still think they're super talented. And there's a lot of basketball played, and I think they could get really hot at the right time.
I almost expect it. I think this is just too good. This is too much talent to not make a run. They are currently looking at it here. Oh, I lost my standings. Did I? No, I have it here. Okay. They're currently sixth seeded in the Eastern Conference. And I completely buy into the idea of them making a run to the, I guess you call it the division title. They are for the division. I think they're only about a couple games back. Though the Celtics have a lot of wins ahead of them in the loss column. They're five ahead in the loss column. So it would take a bit, but I do think that the Sixers can make a run for one of those top three. There's no question. I mean, it's just they could make a trade. I don't know if they need to, but I'm with you. I think they're going to make a run. I think they should make a run. I'd be really surprised if they hung around at five or six.
Yeah. And just staying with while we're talking about the Atlantic, another team that's kind of been in a tailspin has been the Nets, and they're, that we've talked about, Kyrie's been out for, it feels like over a month now, and just came back the other day. I think he shot like 10 for 11 from the floor in his first game back. And Yeah, that shoulder impingement, and you need surgery, and there was a lot of speculation, and all of a sudden he just came back and played his first game and did really well. But they've been kind of in a free fall, and they're currently sitting at the eighth seed, and they're under 500. Orlando surpassed them. So keep an eye on them too, because there was reasonably high expectations based on the fact that they were good last year, and they signed these two big free agents. I mean, of course, we knew KD wasn't going to be around, but they, at least most people, figure they'd be better, and they haven't been yet. So keep an eye on them as well.
Yep. And how about some props for the Heat? Because now we thought that they'd be good, but they are really playing great basketball, and they're not doing it with a lot of flashy names, except for Jimmy Butler, certainly. But you're getting guys like Bam Adebayo and who's the Okoye, I think it was the other one, and just a bunch of other great players. I wanted to get your thoughts on them as well. Their defense is phenomenal, and I got to give a lot of credit to Spoelstra for getting them off to a great start. They did lose their last two games, but it is a very, very tough team. And I think they'll win a lot of games because of that great defense. So where are you at with the Miami?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you give credit to Spoelstra. You also got to give credit to Pat Riley's team, because, you know, I think at the end of last year, we were talking about the Heat and how they were really in rough shape financially in terms of their in terms of cap, and just didn't seem like they had a lot of players. But I mean, you mentioned Bam, but they've done an excellent job of scouting and finding guys. I mean, they drafted Tyler Hero out of Kentucky, and that wasn't a, I mean, you know, he was on the big stage in college hoops, and people knew who he was. But Kendrick Nunn has been their point guard, and he's been fantastic for them. Just kind of like, wait, a whole bunch of guys, like, who are they? Kendrick Nunn. Duncan Robinson is an amazing story. I mean, he played at Division III Williams College, and he's playing small forward and playing major rotation minutes, like 20 minutes a game, and just draining threes. I mean, he's a bit limited. I mean, that he's, you know, he's not a great defender, but he's been a key contributor to this team. And and as you mentioned, Bam has been fantastic, just a double-double machine, really just a solid defender. I mean, he can probably guard all three front court positions if he has the foot speed to stay with a lot of small forwards, and just an animal on the boards. I love that guy. I love watching him, and just his effort and enthusiasm on this team. And it's kind of a fun team to watch. I know the other night they lost to the Knicks, which you texted me and you kind of predicted that. But yeah, they're one of the more surprising teams, just because I thought they'd be a playoff team, but I thought they'd be, you know, in the bottom half of the Eastern Conference, maybe a 6 seed or 7 seed. And they're easily one of the top two or three teams in the East right now, and they've been that way all year. And it's just it really is a credit to the front office and how well they've done, and just kind of filling holes. I mean, like, you know, no one talks about Deion Waiters because they don't need him. You know, I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing for real. Now, and it really brings to light what did we think? Who did we have winning that division when the season started? Because we talked about how bad the division was, and I'm thinking, like, who else was in that division that could have been, you know, good enough to have the most wins? Basically, Orlando we liked. I didn't think we liked them that much, and Orlando's doing pretty well too, but.
It had to be Miami. I'd actually go back and listen, but I can't imagine.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody else.
We both hated Charlotte.
Yeah,
we didn't like the Wizards.
Nope.
We might have been a little higher on the Hawks, and I mean they've been a huge disappointment. If you want to,
oh man,
if you want to talk about disappointing?
Yeah, that is disappointing. That's true. Yeah. Because it's not. Were there any significant injuries during most of that? No. I mean, Trey has been healthy much of the year.
Well, Collins did get suspended for PEDs, and he missed a bunch of games. And he is their second best player, and he also he did miss some time with injuries. But yeah, I mean, I think maybe the optimism there was a little unfounded.
Yeah,
it potentially did overachieve a little bit last year, and they're still an awful defensive team. I mean, they're one of the worst defensive teams in basketball.
Right.
And just not. I mean, those not as fun a team as I had hoped for going into the year. But Trey's still a joy to watch, and he's kind of carved out a real personality for himself in the league. I mean, from that standpoint, they're fun to watch. But to answer your question, I think it must have been Miami that we were.
Yeah.
But even though we weren't that high on them.
Right. We thought that it would just be they would win by default, but they're doing more than that. And did you know the Miami Heat are 17-1 at home? I mean, that's amazing. And and the one loss was to my Lakers, and that was a great game. It was a really exciting day for us over here in LA. But that just gives you an idea of where their strength is. They're not as good on the road, but typically an NBA team will end up being about 500, and that's basically where they are, 10-11. Losing to the Knicks is bizarre, but as we were talking about, as we alluded to. The thing you got to watch for as Chris Vernon, and if you Chris Vernon of the Grizzlies of the Ringer noted, watch for teams that come into a game, especially a day game after having a night out in a big city, and the Heat are a great example here because they were out in New York, and the night before you got New York nightlife, and then you go into a game against the Knicks during the day or maybe early evening. And they lose. They don't. Yeah. And not only did they lose, but they gave up like 124 points. Very unlike them.
Yeah, that is interesting. I wonder if you could. There's so few day games in the NBA that you could easily kind of track that down. I wonder if there is something to that. We could probably.
I would isolate it to this: any Saturday or Sunday game. Yeah. It doesn't even have to be a day game. I just feel like. If the team has been out the night before, going at it hard, and they come in the next day and they're visiting some other team, they watch for that other team. And whether it's them covering the spread or just winning outright, you're gonna see it because they're just not gonna bring their A game. The best example we've had so far this year, I think you can guess, is when the Grizzlies came to. Although this is went in reverse because. Yeah, the thing I guess what you want to do is take the underdog, whatever the game is. Because sometimes that underdog is going to be the team that's visiting. It just depends on like what the matchup is. But I don't think anybody thought the Clippers were going to lose as bad as they did to Memphis and then give up 145 points.
Yeah.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah, the Clippers are such a strange team right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to call them disappointing because they're – playing like 700 ball, but
it's a weird
so
team.
Up and down, and there's been grumbling on that team too.
Grumbling, interesting.
Yeah, Montrezl Harrell was like, I can't remember what he said, but he was pretty outspoken about the team, and I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of surprising, but again, they're another team that's so talented that like the Sixers that you kind of expect, and again, I think we both. Or I might have picked the Clippers to represent the West. So those are my two teams right now, the Clippers and the Sixers, both kind of mild disappointments and maybe a little, I don't know, maybe a little grumbling behind the scenes going on. So we'll follow that for sure. But bad job by me.
Well, I'm not giving up on that yet. I think the Clippers will still end up with a top three seed at the end of the year. I'm not giving up on that. It's still halfway through the year,
But it has been odd, I will say. And further, the defense for which, you know, the defense that everybody thought was going to be a dominant defense has not been that dominant. Like, they've been giving up. Like, it comes in waves. Like, they'll have a good game. But then you get this game, like, against the Wizards where they give up a billion points. Though they scored a billion points, too. But, and then you get a game like we talked about against Memphis where they just, at home, allow 140-plus points. It's just hard to imagine that a team with Kawhi and Paul George and company, and I realize that sometimes those guys are not playing, but there are some games where they are playing, and it doesn't matter. It seems to be that the team hasn't really found its footing yet. So I can't explain it either, Chris. I thought they would be doing a lot better than they are. I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer there. I guess maybe there is something going on behind the scenes, right?
Could be, but also remember too, like the Clippers last year were the second hottest team in the second half of the season. After the Rockets had the best record, I can't remember if it was at the midway point or post. I think it was. I checked. It was post All-Star break last year. The Rockets had the best record, but the Clippers were second. Man. And the Clippers had done that after they had made all those significant trades, you know, at the deadline where Tobias Harris got shipped out and Boban, and, you know, they made all these deals and all of a sudden they started getting really hot. And so, you know, it just goes to show you, you know, you gotta be patient and wait it out. And, you know, like you pointed out, Kawhi's, they're taking it easy with him, which is probably the prudent thing to do. So, so wait and see with them as well.
Yeah, I'm not. I really more, even more so than the Sixers. I think they're going to make a run of their own. No, actually, not more so than Sixers. I think the Sixers have the biggest expectation of a second half rally, but these guys would be right behind them. I really think that they're the, like I said, I think this is a team that's not built for the regular season anyway. So they'll be fine. I'm not even worried about it. Unless there's just some kind of personality crisis that I'm not familiar with. That team's going to be all right. I'm not really worried about them, you know?
Yeah. You know what's so crazy, too, about the West right now? And I think we're going to talk about the Jazz a little bit. But, I mean, the Lakers are just kind of on a mission right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're far and away the one seed right now. But the next four teams are just so tight right now. You got the Jazz at five games back, Denver 5.5, the Rockets 6, the Clippers 6, and then the Mavericks at 8.5. So you've got like five teams within 3.5 games of each other. So it's going to be a lot of jockeying for playoff seeding, you know, teams fighting for that home court. You know, when you're looking at that 4-5 matchup, and it should be a lot of fun. I think it's gonna be the second half is gonna be nuts. You gotta watch those teams like the Clippers and Mavs, Rockets. There's gonna be a lot of back and forth, and you know, who can predict where they're gonna end up.
I have a couple of points I wanted to highlight, because this ties back to our season predictions. Number one, you nailed it with Denver, because you were actually bigger on Denver than Utah, and I was actually really big on the Utah train. And so far, Denver seems to be doing better, though there have been struggles on both of these teams. So that was number one. Number two, Conley has not really been the spark plug that I expected. I haven't seen as many Utah games as you have, and so I wanted to get your thoughts on that. I mean, Conley's been out for a while, and it seems like at that point, the Utah Jazz went back to being very good and winning more consistently. And I wonder, what has Conley done that has gotten in the way of their success? So those are my two questions to you.
Yeah, it's so strange, because I think I'll have to check the scoreboard, but because Utah was winning tonight, And I think this would be their 10th straight win.
Yes, yes, that's right.
And this has all happened with Conley out. Yeah, they beat Brooklyn tonight in Brooklyn on the road. So never easy. I don't care who the opponent is, never easy to win on the road, especially, you know, going east to west coast and so forth. Yeah, I mean, that is shocking. And that was, I think that was one of the reasons we liked Utah so much. I haven't seen that much of the Jazz, to be fair. But what jumped out at me was I was looking at the assist numbers on those teams. And Conley's assist numbers weren't great. And I mean, four and a half. Joe Ingles, surprisingly, is one of the top assist men on that team. And he was right at 4.6. which kind of jumped out at me too. I just wasn't expecting to see that from a forward, just that kind of a passing ability. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in general, I think it seems like Royce O'Neal's filled in really well in Mike Conley's absence. And you know, it's almost like, well, when Conley comes back, what do we do? I mean, kind of feel like we have this chemistry going. We're the hottest team in basketball right now. You said that Denver is a little better. No, they're not. I mean,
no, they're not.
Ooh. Not right now. They're not. I mean, Utah has a better record. They're the 2 seed, and
well, they do. I mean, because they won. That's true. That's true. But they were tied going in.
Yeah,
7-12. Okay.
But, you know, and it's kind of weird to say it because that was a big reason why we're so high on them is they replaced Rubio and they got Conley and it really hasn't worked out. And then, you know, sometimes, you bring in a big name and you think it's going to, you know, be a perfect fit and it doesn't quite work out that way. And that seems to be what's happening here. And everyone just seems to be playing a lot better and I don't know. I'd have to watch them more closely, but I feel like maybe the chemistry is not quite right with Conley in the mix.
Now, I think that I think you're onto something there, because I don't even know what specifically about his game makes that so, other than the fact that maybe he just dribbles the ball too much. That's why I was wondering if you had a better idea on that, because I haven't seen enough of them to really get a feel for what they're like with him in there. And now I really don't, because he hasn't been playing for the last 2 weeks. So it's really something. I mean, sometimes less is more. I mean, you can't fault the Jazz for trying to go for a big piece like that. But I am surprised. I'm really surprised it hasn't worked out. So maybe that's just me not knowing Conley's game well enough. But either way, you know, the results are the results. Like they've been playing much better without him. And we'll see, you know? We'll see. On the Nuggets, let's stay with them. I haven't figured them out either. They're kind of an odd team. Certainly, they play pretty well when they're at home, but they've had plenty of ups and downs this year, and I think they're good, but when your best player is a center, maybe that creates problems when it's time to close out a game, and I've always felt that way about teams that don't have a really great point guard. And who is a really great point guard, right? Is it Murray? You know, who is it going to be? Like, I don't really see that. That's kind of where their weakness is to me. I don't think they have the same kind of point guard or just guard play. Let's just be more specific. Or even like a power, even like small forward. Like, I don't really see that kind of guy that can be there again and again. They had a big old lead against the Clippers on Sunday. And it took the jaws of life for them to find a way out of that game, because the Clippers were just cutting into that lead and cutting into that lead all the way up until the 2 minute mark of the game. And the Nuggets had to they needed like two baskets, and it took them a while just to get there. And then they got two free throws and they finally won. But nothing comes easy for this team. I've been saying this for weeks. When you watch them play, it just doesn't seem like things are easy for them offensively. There are a lot of little layers to that, but as great as Jokic is, he's tremendous. He's a tremendous player, and he's a selfless player. He passes the ball. He's really wonderful. But I think that there's just the general lack of depth with that team. So while they're the, I guess at this point, the three seed, it just doesn't seem like any of the anything that they've been doing has come easily. What's your thought on the Nuggets?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Clippers game on that was on Sunday. That was the second game of back-to-back. The prior day, I think it was a – no, it was an evening game. It was a Saturday night. They lost at home, and you mentioned their record at home, which is 16-5. They lost at home the prior night to the Cavs, which is just – I know every team has ups and downs and there's some shockers, but that is not a
– not
that is not one, yeah, that is
yeah,
not,
not acceptable. I agree.
I mean, to lose at home to one of the three or four worst teams in the game, something weird is going on. Yeah, and then they bounce back and I did not watch that Clippers game, but I kept an eye on the scores, and it was they won by 10, but they had a pretty significant lead in the third and fourth quarter. I think they were up, you know, almost 20 at some points, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, what you mentioned about the point guard, again, it's, you know, these teams are. The dynamics are just kind of different. And you mentioned Jokic is a good passer. When you have a guy, you know, in the middle who's getting six assists a game, you know, the guards are going to – their numbers are going to suffer by comparison. So, you know, the next best assist guy is Murray with just a shade under five. But yeah, that is an interesting observation. I still like them. I'm still high on them. But as I pointed out, they, you know, they're in the third seed right now, but there's such a jumble that, it could go a lot of different ways, and they could, you know, they could end up fifth or even sixth potentially. So, keep an eye on them. I mean, one interesting other side note is, Michael Porter Jr., who is one of, in his class, one of the top, if not the top recruits in the nation when he was in college. I believe he played at Missouri. And I think he was the guy who committed to Cal and then ended up transferring with the coach. I may be wrong, and I'll have to double check. But he was one of the top recruits in the nation. And you know, he was a certain one and doneer and has just had a rash of injuries. But lately he's been playing a lot of minutes and he's had a few big games in terms of scoring. So keep an eye on him too, because he could provide a little depth in the front court. And again, the pedigree is there. It's just, can he stay healthy? So just another guy to keep an eye on. Because he's still young, and you know, I mean, if, depending on which scouts you talk to, has a world of potential.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, I think they'll take it. I am curious about if we're staying with Denver. I'm curious about whether they're going to try to trade for some shooting depth, whether it's a wing or whether it's a guard. I haven't really heard any rumblings to that effect. Have you?
I haven't heard anything about what they would do as far as making a move. I can't even think of, you know, I mean, I kind of think they're set up okay, Dave. I really do. I don't exactly know what they'd need. I mean, in terms of 3-point shooting, I mean, they're pretty good. I mean, you know, Murray's, you know, you think of Murray as a shooter, and he's been probably the biggest disappointment in that regard. He's shooting like 32% from three. But Barton's been decent, you know, shooting a decent clip. And even Jokic is pretty good, a 34% three-point shooter, which is league average actually. But for a big, you know, he can stretch the floor a little bit there, and Millsap's good, and Malik Beasley shoots over 38%, which is excellent. So, I don't really know that I wouldn't expect them to be super active in the trade market, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that this group they have now were able to have. Wasn't it like the number one seed in the West last year or something? No, maybe not. It might have been.
They were the one seed.
They were, right? Because I know Golden State wasn't. So with that in mind, they probably can get it done. And what helps them is their defense. Their defense continues. The one thing that they've been doing very consistently is defense. Their defense is very, very good. I saw the game. I don't know if you saw this game, but on Friday, I think it was, they were playing Dallas at Dallas. And the Mavericks could not get out of their own way to get basically one basket. They needed one basket to ice this game. They couldn't do it. And they went cold. And you got to give some credit to Denver on that one. So I think that's all well and good. But you know what? I also think that this is going to be a problem for them in the playoffs. So we'll see. But no, I mean, Denver, in long term, they're fine. But it just seems like it's a lot of the same issues I've seen from them before. So we'll see what happens. By the way, on the Mavericks, I mean, Luka's having a great year, and you're even getting some nice contributions from Porzingis, who has been in and out of the lineup with various injuries. But when he is playing, he can be really good. But two things with Dallas, and see if you agree with this. Number one, their defense is still pretty hideous. And two, I don't know. You know, I have long regarded Rick Carlisle as a good coach. But that was such a bad look on Friday, that game, the way they were unable to close out. I mean, how would you attribute that, if you saw the game, that is? Because they just don't seem to have a plan. They're just kind of like hoisting shots from what I saw. So, I mean, am I being a little harsh on them? Or do you think that Dallas has some work to do in terms of being better at closing out games?
I still look at them as a young team. I mean, you know, their best player is young. I mean, even Kristaps is like, he's still like such an immature player. I feel like I did not watch that game, but I feel like I wouldn't get too bent out of shape, because you know, the expectations for this team were not super high to begin with. And, you know, I mean, I feel like they've got a bright future, and I think, you know, young teams make mistakes. And so I would not worry about them. I pulled up in the NBA trade machine, and if I sounded distracted, that's why. I was just working through a couple scenarios that I wanted to explore a little bit, but sorry about that.
Oh, it's fine. I did not even notice, so no problem there. The West is a bit of a jumble this year. You are right. There are a lot of teams that are within like a couple games of each other. We addressed the Clippers already. The Rockets are what they are. We'll cut to them in a minute. But two really good success stories from this year, and it is the Oklahoma City Thunder with Chris Paul, and the Memphis Grizzlies with Ja Morant and Triple J. Now the Grizzlies are okay. I'm going to be fair. They're 18-22, but they just got a big win tonight against the Houston Rockets. They beat them 120. Was it 1-1? Wait, let me make sure I get this right. But they just beat them 121-110. It's a great win. So if they keep playing at, you know, maybe a little bit better than the pace they're on, they can be a 500 team and they can get to the playoffs. So they've had a lot of potential, and they've shown it throughout the year. We already told you about the game they won at the Clippers. Very exciting team to watch. And when they're on their game, everything's great. I mean, Morant is just such a thrill to watch. He's a great player, and he's everything we hoped he could be so far in the NBA. And that's really saying something, because when you're a rookie, it's anybody's guess. But he's really delivered. Like, he's been terrific. And then for the Thunder, maybe a more unsung hero, a group of unsung heroes, but Paul looked, you know, we thought he was done. We thought he was slow and washed up, but he is really delivering so far with the Thunder. They're in the seventh seed, but to be fair, they're like a game back of Dallas and four games back, or two, maybe a couple games back of the Clippers. And they're 8-2 in their last 10. So I think this team is here to stay, and it's great to see that. So what your thoughts on those two?
Yeah, I have a little egg on my face because of Ja. I thought he'd be good, but I didn't think he'd be as good as he is, already. And he's really fun to watch just because he plays so, at times recklessly, but he really is very aggressive and is just an exciting finisher when he has the ball in his hands, and just a superb talent. And it's cool to see a team like Memphis get such an exciting young player. And you're right, with him and Triple J, they're going to be a lot of fun to watch, in the next few years. And it's funny, like, I feel like I'm having deja vu because I, as a Celtics fan, I'm watching these teams whose picks Boston owns. And last year it was the Kings, and, it's like, oh, the Kings are always terrible. It's going to be in the lottery. So what happens? Kings almost make the playoffs. I think it was, they ended up getting the last, they ended up being like the ninth best team in the West or something like that. So it was a lottery pick, but it was, it wasn't extremely valuable. And I feel like the same thing's happening with Memphis this year. And, if the pick this year for Memphis is top six protected, and it's not going to, unless something freakish happens in with the ping pong balls, it's the Celtics are going to get Memphis's pick, and it's, there's a chance it's not even in the lottery. But as I look at it, it's like, well, with this young core that Memphis has, if it were to roll over next year, it could be even worse. I mean, Memphis just looks really like they have a bright future. I also like Brandon Clark out of Gonzaga. He's done a really nice job, and he's getting a nice rotation minutes for them. Oklahoma City, I felt like that team was just kind of thrown together, and they're really kind of guard heavy. I mean, with Chris Paul Gilgeous-Alexander.
SGA.
SGA, yeah, he's been fantastic for them. And, it just felt like, the pieces kind of came together late in the season, in off season rather, after the big Russell trade, Russell Westbrook, that is. And they're right there with Memphis fighting for that, that last playoff spot. It is a weird roster construction, with Gallinari, your one front court scorer, who actually is pretty nice. They, Chris Paul and Schroeder and SGA in the backcourt. And they've really kind of done a nice job there. And it was funny too, because after Utah, they're one of the hotter teams in the NBA. I think they've won 8 of 10. And the Lakers played them in Oklahoma City when was that, Dave? Was that Saturday night? I can't remember. It doesn't matter.
It was I think it was Saturday night, right as during all the NFL divisional action. The Lakers went into that game without LeBron or Anthony Davis.
And they smoked him. They destroyed him. Yeah.
I could not believe that score.
Yeah. So it just shows you the Lakers are really on another level right now. Even with their two best players out, I mean, JaVale and KCP, or I don't know, is KCP out right now? But I know Kyle Kuzma had a big game. Maybe they all felt like, no one talks about us. We have something to prove. Alex Caruso and all these guys wanted to kind of make a statement. And they blew out Oklahoma City in their own building. So kudos to the Lakers B team for that. I mean, it's been a nice story. And you love to see, and the other team I would throw in that group too, Memphis, Oklahoma City, is the Spurs, just because they've been also very feisty recently and had a couple nice road wins. They won on the East Coast. They beat they won in Boston, and in a game in which Cambo had got ejected for a double technical, which really outraged me. But give him credit. And then they also won in Toronto more recently. So. Those three teams are kind of fighting at the, at the bottom of, we talked about the top of the Western Conference. Those teams are fighting for those last couple of roster spots in the West. And, it's good to see, it's good to see that, you got some young guys, some teams that, are in different positions than we're used to seeing them in, but still kind of fighting to get into the playoffs.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. It's, I think the theme of the year with the NBA is fresh blood. And you still have some of the teams that we've known over the last 5 years in the mix, but a lot of them are new. The Lakers were completely irrelevant a year ago, and here they are at the one seed. I mean, it's an amazing time. Same scenario for, who else? Well, for Memphis, certainly. I mean, Memphis was, I think they were garbage last year. They didn't seem very good. Meanwhile, you've got the Spurs, who they just look bad. Like, they can't defend anybody. I mean, the best they can come up with is LaMarcus Aldridge and DeJounte Murray. But they, and I guess DeRozan, but man, that is not a good team. They just look pretty helpless sometimes, especially when they're on the road. Man, they just look brutal out there. Portland is actually a bit of a disappointment. Would you agree? I mean, we didn't think they were going to be. You actually were higher on them than me, but I was not expecting them to be that great. And they're not only not great, they're just not good. They made a desperation move. They signed Carmelo Anthony. Did we cover that on the last podcast? Or was that after?
We did, yeah. We did. Okay. Yeah.
Well, be that as it may, I mean, I don't know how well he's playing, but he obviously hasn't helped the team. These guys are a disaster. I mean, they finally won a game. And it's funny because after the game, the guy went, I forgot who they interviewed after the game, but he's like, oh man, it's been a while since I've done one of these, like a post-game win interview. That's rough. The guy's on there in the court saying, it's been a while since we've had one of these. And that is absolutely rough. You can't even say they're a good home team anymore. They're barely 9-10 at home. I mean, there isn't a lot going right with them right now.
Yeah, a couple things on Portland. One, Nurkic and then Collins just killed them. I mean, Nurkic we knew wasn't going to start the season. I don't know if they've updated his return date, but I'd almost like say just sit out the season. I'd go into full tank mode. And I know this is not supposed to be a great draft, but this is a team that could use some fresh blood.
Yeah.
And they're going to be in real cap problems. They're going to have real cap problems, in my opinion, just because of the amount of money they've outlaid to their guards. And the other thing they did was they gave up a lot of their front court depth. And And they really don't have those, you know, those kind of front court players who can help them compete. And just because they have no bigs, it's kind of a bad scene.
Yeah.
You know,
let me just interrupt. Like, what about the big elephant in the room, Hassan Whiteside? Like, would you consider him a disappointment at the moment?
It's sort of like what are your expectations of him? I mean, I guess, you know, I thought he'd be better for sure. He's just looking up his stats right now. I mean, he has played, he's played almost 40 games for them. So he's been in the lineup. He's been fine, but, you know, I think Nurkic is a much more versatile player, and Whiteside's really kind of, I think he's much more limited. I don't know. I just think they have a lot of problems in their front court, and I would tell Nurkic, just take the winter off and I'll see you next year. and really, seriously, I would go in full tank mode if I were them. And yeah, just because you can strike gold in the lottery.
Right. Right.
And you know, it is.
You've been anti-tanking though, so you're endorsing it this time as an exception.
Well, I mean, what do you mean by anti-tanking?
Well, you've been talking about how tanking is overrated and it doesn't necessarily pan out and the draft picks are a crap.
Oh, yeah. Because I'm not anti-tanking the standpoint of like, oh, these teams are, what are they doing? I mean, yeah, they're trying to get better. Mm-hmm. It is a crapshoot, but yeah, you give yourself the best chance to get a good player.
Well, from where they are now, right? Yeah. Like, it's not if you were doing it from the beginning of the season and putting no effort in the game, that's one thing. But where they are now, they have no chance to do anything in the playoffs. There's absolutely no point in trying to fight for it. Who fights for an 8 seed? That's the stupidest thing you could imagine in the NBA. The 8 seed is absolutely useless. Nobody, with rare exception, like once every 20 years, an 8 seed will beat a 1 seed in the first round. And especially in the best of seven format, it's extremely rare. I mean, I think it might have happened in recent times, but the last one I can remember is when the Warriors, isn't this funny? The Warriors, when they were an underdog many, many, many years ago, we're talking about 13 years ago, went out and beat the number one seeded Dallas Mavericks, I believe, at that point in time, they were the defending champions. No, not the defending. Defending Western Conference champions, though. That is true. And it just doesn't happen. So fighting for an 8 seed is stupid. So I'm with you on that. It's like there's no point in trying to get to the playoffs anymore.
I would say it's totally useless. I was just talking about Memphis, and like I think for those young players, it is valuable. You know, I think I really do think that getting there and playing, you know, the playoffs are such a different beast because you're playing one team. And it's a series and all that, and just getting your feet wet there. Portland was in the conference finals last year, and I think it's less important for them to try to get that 8 seed and get swept by the Lakers.
Right.
I have mixed feelings about that, but in their case, and just the dynamics of their roster. I would try to see if I could pick up a higher draft pick and see where that lands, where the ping pong balls land. I mean, you know, when you look at Portland, they've got almost $60 million in contracts this year. Two players, Lillard and McCollum, and then you throw in Whiteside, who's making $27 million, but that's expiring. I think that's an expiring deal. Let me just double check that. But, you know, their finances are about, in my opinion, about as bad as anyone's. They could use, like I said, they could use some fresh blood and someone making, a rookie minimum to kind of help them out. One guy I haven't followed as much, but I know people were, or the team was kind of talking him up, was Anfernee Simons, who is a 20-year-old, and he's, there were talks that he was going to be, involved in trades, and Portland saying, oh, we don't want to trade him. And I guess he's done okay. He's had some flashes here and there. Averaging only 9 points a game in 22 minutes. But I think there was a lot of expectation that he would be a much more vital player on this team. And so far, I guess he's been okay. You'd like to see the three-point shooting a little better than 33%, which is what he's shooting right now. So, but another guy to keep an eye on. But that's the kind of player that they need in that guys who aren't making very much and who potentially can be used in deals or overall to bolster their depth is what they need right now. And it's funny, like this draft is like very point guard heavy, which is exactly what. Or you think they don't need, but
yeah, they wouldn't need.
It still could help them though. Have that backup could potentially spell their two starters, and also you can develop a guy like that and trade him. So,
oh, that's an interesting angle. Yeah, the draft pick could be for someone to trade, or you could trade one of the incumbents, which might be more controversial, but it is possible to get some value for either McCollum or Lillard at this point.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good rundown of their situation. Certainly there's not much going on with the team as it is. They need depth, and I think whatever they can do to augment it would be great. So they would be well served in trying to position themselves for that draft. I think that's about it. I mean, obviously the Lakers are a big story in the NBA, and the Bucks are the big story in the East. They're both doing great. They played against each other, and this did happen while we were on break. They played against each other on Thursday, December 19th, whenever Star Wars came out, and the Bucks killed them. They actually had a great game. The Bucks are still doing their thing. I don't really have a lot to say about it. They're just dominating, I think. There was one game where they were struggling mightily at San Francisco against the Warriors, and they could not buy a field goal. They were really struggling, but they won because their defense is that good. And I've been seeing similar results for the Lakers. They've been getting through games because their defense continues to play at a high level, whether they're down injuries or whatever. They've done a great job just weathering the storm against the weaker competition. So you can't say enough about both of these teams right now through the beginning of the season. At the halfway point, they both look pretty solid. Things can change in the second half, but no complaints. I shouldn't say no complaints because obviously both teams have things that they can work on and improve. Lakers, three-point shooting. The Bucks. I don't know about the Bucks. That's... What can they do better? I can you think of anything they can do better? Like their defense is great.
Yeah.
They're one of the best offensive efficiencies in the NBA. It's got to be like top three.
You know what's crazy, Dave, is last year their net rating was like 8.6, which is like kind of freakish. They're actually better this year, 11.7. And I mean, I remember last year people were saying, well, this is kind of like, I mean, the geeky stat guys were saying, like, this is kind of like, kind of a generational team. And we kind of forget about them because they got knocked out of the playoffs. And, it was a mild disappointment. And they're better. They're actually better. They lost Brogdon, and they're better somehow. Giannis is a better player than he was. I mean, if Giannis doesn't win the MVP this year, I mean, he won it last year, but he's even better than he was last year. I don't know. It's a tribute to their player personnel development. It's a tribute to Coach Bud, who's done an excellent job pretty much everywhere he's been. Their GM, do you remember John Porsche? I think is his name. He's like still probably one of the youngest executives in the NBA. I mean, they sort of fly under the radar just because the expectations were so high after they were outstanding in the regular season and they were the one seed and didn't end up in the finals. You can't sleep on any team that has Giannis, and they're going to be tough.
Yeah, they will be. And I think we both already lost our under bet on them. Like we predicted the under. What was the number? Was it 53?
Oh,
57?
Yeah.
Whatever it was. Like we were like, no. And then, but they're going to get 60 wins. Like,
yeah, they'll probably get 65, 60. They have a chance at 70 wins.
Yeah. Definitely.
And they're on that kind of pace.
Lakers too. It's really remarkable. So
I mean, what's crazy? Yeah, some of these teams at the top of the league, like Boston, for example, last year. And I don't want to inundate you with Celtics talk, but last year they won 49 games. Mm-hmm. They have a chance to win. I mean, they were on a 60-win pace at a certain point, like before last week. I mean, they're going to be significantly better than they were a year ago, which is in my mind a surprise. There's gonna be some gaudy records at the top of both the East and the West.
That's pretty interesting. And it's we both thought both these teams could be pretty good, but this is extraordinary. They've done a great job, and I don't really see any real sign of them slowing down. I figured injuries would be a factor for the Lakers, and they've come, but they've still managed to be pretty good even with the injuries. And different people have been getting injured throughout the season. Like, you know, Avery Bradley is out a few games. Rondo's out right now. You know, Anthony Davis hasn't played for about a week because of the hard landing on his bottom.
Wow, that looked bad.
Yeah, it did. It looked like it was going to be a lot more severe. But I can't blame the Lakers for taking their time putting him back in the lineup.
No, like,
take all the time. Like,
absolutely. I mean, there's just – I've been saying it for weeks, like, rest these guys, you know?
Yeah.
Like, rest LeBron. I mean, LeBron's having an MVP-type season himself, and he doesn't need to play as many minutes. I mean, and especially if you have Kuzma backing him up, you can kind of get away with, cutting his minutes against some of these really bad teams. That fall, he fell right on his tailbone. Who was that? That was against the Knicks, wasn't it? No, what game was that?
Yeah, I think so. Because that was
Knicks,
a weird game. Because that was, and then there. I remember our friend Floyd was complaining about the Lakers and not really trying to initiate a fight after Portis had that dirty foul. That was a
really
dirty
foul. Yeah,
so dirty. But I think his grievance wasn't about the foul. It was just the fact that they, you know, why didn't they come to blows over that? Like, why weren't they trying to get in their face about it? And you know, why weren't they pushing him around? Like they did.
That was KCP, right? Wasn't it KCP who had to go to the locker room?
Had to be, yeah. Because he was going for a layup.
Yeah.
And Portis just comes in and just whacks him on the face.
On the face,
didn't even try to get to the
almost
basketball.
Almost clotheslined him from behind.
I mean, the guy is like 3 feet in the air at that point. So, I mean, clearly the intent is not in question. He was going for the body, not going for the ball. And he just goes straight down. And you're right. It's kind of like, I kind of see our friend Floyd's point of view on that. It's like, why, if this was like 20 years ago, you're talking about fisticuffs and guys coming off the bench and, you know, Jeff Gannon going to get dragged by the ankle. Like, you know, it's just not, it's different, isn't it? I mean, were you a little surprised there wasn't more of a fracas?
No, because I thought the refs got a handle on it pretty well. And I mean, they acted quickly. We were texting when it happened, and they looked at the tape, and it was pretty quick. They came back and made a decision. It wasn't like one of these things like, okay, guys, let's go. I mean, they might have been looking at the tape for like a minute and just came back and tossed them. And I think that helps. I think being decisive in that case and throwing the guy out of the game was absolutely 100% the right move.
Yeah, they nailed that. That's true. That guy, we said it at the time, like the moment it happened, like, oh, that guy's got to get ejected. And they very swiftly and ejected him. And I thought that was the right call.
Definitely, 100%. And you're right. The Lakers are the story right now. And you must be on cloud nine at this point.
It's been amazing. Like I am very happy about their play. And it is funny because going into the year, we thought the Clippers were going to be the big dog in town the entire season. And it's not even close. Like the Lakers have clearly established themselves as a team to beat, at least within the Western Conference. I mean, they have just absolutely destroyed it. They've beaten the teams they wanted to beat. They're supposed to beat. They go on the road. They beat some of the bigger teams. They've only lost 7 games this year, and they're on a 9-game win streak. On top of that, and I swear to you, like not only the Oklahoma City game, but the Cleveland game. On Sunday night, was it Sunday night or was it Monday night? I can't remember. It must have been Monday because I'm thinking, it had to be Monday. Okay, so Monday night, they're playing Cleveland. Like, oh, well, you know, they got LeBron back, but this is probably going to be a little bit more rugged of a game. They have an 81-point second half, which is like the most since probably 1983 or something like that. Some crazy, crazy long time since they've had an 81-point second half. You just don't see that in the NBA. Like, that's just crazy. You know, they had a little bit of a slow start from the field. 81 points in the second half against an admittedly terrible defense, but unbelievable. Like, they just took that game, which was a nip-and-tuck game, and blew out the Cavaliers in the second half. It was just, like, it really just shows you the kind of special year it's been so far.
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, I mean, I think the Oklahoma City game was the one that impressed me the most, just because we're seeing this team, and I've denigrated their starters, or their, not their starters, well, some of their starters, but, you know, outside of AD and LeBron, I was like, it's a little kind of a thin roster, and they really stepped it up, and that was impressive.
I didn't know how they were going to do that. Like,
I still don't know how they did that. How did they do that?
Well, Kuzma had a big role. He had I think he had 36 points in that game. He had easily his best game of the year. I mean, he was so good, and that was a big part of it. And I think beyond that, I think it was just continuously good defense. Dwight Howard was a big part of that too. Like he was active on the boards. I mean, it was incredible. Like you just kind of witnessed it and you're like, that's amazing. Like that's, you know, it's not like Oklahoma City's is an easy team to beat on the road either. That was something that really was quite, and to clearly put that in perspective, it was only like, I think 2 days earlier that the Thunder welcomed back Russell Westbrook to Oklahoma City. Big ass tribute for him. And then what do they do after that? They just destroy the Houston Rockets.
Yeah. And Chris Paul was on a mission in that game too.
So that is the same team that got blown out by the Lakers. It's just crazy. You just can't visualize that. And then you see it and there it is.
Yeah. I think it was a subsequent game after the Rockets game. It was the Laker game, if I'm not mistaken. Which was doubly surprising because they'd just beaten a good team.
Right.
I mean, just nailing them.
And it's not like they're overlooking the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers have the number one seed in the West right now. So it's just a testament to how much drive I think, and I guess you could say killer instinct at this point for the Lakers collectively, because they really did. Like that, it's been a long time since I see the Lakers do anything like that, shorthanded especially.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that's going to really help them, just because it'll build up confidence in their bench players and some of their second-tier players. to know that. And you know, and honestly, maybe even for LeBron in 82, knowing that some of these other guys can play. I mean, I guess the fun thing for you, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but like seeing guys, seeing guys like Alex Caruso was an okay college player at Texas A&M. I mean, but you look at his numbers as a college player, and he doesn't even look like a, I don't know how you figure he ends up being a spot starter or starter in the NBA. I mean, just based on what he did. And I don't know. I just, as a fan, that those are the kinds of stories I like. And a guy who's kind of unexpectedly starts to turn the corner a little bit. He's still playing. He's playing under 20 minutes a game this year, but still a little bit more responsibility every year, and has kind of run with it a little bit and done a nice job. So I don't know. Those are the kinds of things I dig as a fan.
Yeah, I dig it too. He's been fun to watch this year, and I think his defense has been really tenacious throughout the year, and that's as big a reason why the defense is as good as any. You know, it's him, it's Dwight Howard, who, by the way, great redemption story there too. I mean, he wanted to make things right, and he really put everything he had into making things right this season. He has committed himself to playing great on the defensive end, and he's making contributions on the other end too. Like, he even can shoot a 3-pointer once in a while. He's had two already from what I saw. I think it was, but he's had three this season, which is pretty absurd for a guy who went in as like one of like a 7-footer. He is just tremendous. I mean, Danny Green, we talked about how good his defense is. I mean, pretty much everyone has been doing a pretty solid job on that end before. And so that's just part of a great machine right now. And we'll see, that's kind of where I'm at.
I just want just to go back to Caruso just for a sec, because I mean, he's a 4-year player at Texas A&M. Sorry, I don't want to derail the conversation too much, but I mean, this is his numbers. This is what you're looking at. I mean, playing 28 minutes a game, which is a lot in college. But the numbers don't really jump out at you. 8 points a game, 5 assists. I mean, that's kind of nice. A couple steals a game, that's nice. But you don't look at a player like this and think, oh yeah, NBA starter. So I don't know. It's kind of cool. Good for the Lakers.
Yep, definitely. Well, I think we're out of time. We wanted to do some trade talk tonight, but it's a little early for it. I mean, but
yeah,
it's early.
We can talk about next time.
Yeah, we'll have some more shots at it. It's a bummer that we couldn't get to it, but we did get some good discussion tonight, so I don't think I'm worried about it either. I think we'll get there.
I honestly, not to tip my hand, but I think it's going to be a pretty quiet deadline. I don't know.
You might be onto something there, because I'm not. Yeah. I'm like thinking, like, anybody that wants to do a trade, you then ask, well, who are you trading with? What is the salary scenario? And it just seems like things don't really line up for a lot of these teams right now.
Especially with some of the big names that have been out, like Drummond and, mm-hmm. and Love. I mean, those contracts are just so gigantic. It's hard to make it work.
Yeah.
Even for teams that it might make sense to trade for Drummond, there aren't that many. Mm-hmm. It's just that fee, I think he makes $27 million, something crazy like that. So it's hard to make that. The numbers fit together. So,
it is going to be so tough for any team to make that work.
Watch, there'll be like 8 trades tomorrow. And be like, sorry, Dave. We'll do an emergency plan.
Yeah. Well, the trade deadline for those who are interested in it is on February the 6th. So there are about 2.5 weeks until we get there. So we'll be on the lookout too. If we do find anything extraordinary, amazing in the interim, we can do our emergency podcast for real. But until then, I say goodnight, Chris, And welcome back. It's good to have you back and doing the NBA thing with me.
Yeah, yeah. We're in the second half, and let's have a good year of pods.
Yeah, 100%. All right, take it easy. Have a good weekend, and I'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks so much, Dave. Take care.
You too. All right.
All right.
Take care. That's Chris in Georgia, and that's our show tonight. And that's how we start our year. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. I am Dave Medina once again. You can find us on Twitter at DidCow, on the web at DidCow.com, and on Apple Podcasts and your other podcast apps out there. Look for Dave in the City Out West. We will continue our long journey of sports. More football talk tomorrow. But until then, we'll see you next time.